Self-discipline. Self-discipline is hell. We need a little attention over there. Yeah. Self-discipline is hell. He's objecting very strongly.
The moment he's so loud, yeah.
Yeah, self-discipline is hell. Now, why do we say that self-discipline is hell? I mean, it's just something you do to yourself. It's something that you choose to do to yourself. You choose to follow a certain pattern by yourself. It's not something that others force you to do. Now, a kid can go around leaving his clothes all over the house, and his mother will pick him up, and she'll scream and holler and shout at him, and still she'll pick him up, and she'll scream and holler and shout at him, and he gets used to it, and he just doesn't hear it after a while, and he thinks, yeah, that's cool, not having to pick up my clothes, not having to do that, and pretty soon it's the norm for him to have her scream and holler and shout and so forth. If she didn't do that, he would think that she didn't love him. Now, many women and men, they think, it's wonderful to have a fight, because then after the fight we can kiss and make up. Well, why not kiss and make up without the fight? Why discipline yourself to the thought that you need to have a fight so that you can kiss and make up? People have become so humanized on this idea that wars are terrible, but they're great, because after the war, everybody becomes friends again. And after the war, economy goes up, and it's much better than it ever was before. So when the economy is down, have a war. And then everyone will get together and pool their resources, and they'll have their war, and they'll fight and kill each other. And then after the war, then everybody's friends again. Now, who are the highest producers in the world besides the Americans? The Japanese.
The Germans.
And the Germans. Now, who are the Americans' dearest friends? The Japanese and the German. Mm-hmm. Now, who do the Americans fight whenever they have a fight? The Japanese and the Germans. This isn't the first war with Japan. It's not the first war with Germany, that's for sure. But why do they want wars? It's a wonderful, simple way to change the attitude of a country from lethargy, from being happy with the simple things in life, to making them want the better things in life, making them want the more highly developed technological things, like radar, which became television, like computers, you know, which became the type of things that they worked on the ship, and all these things. Hey, it became more and more sophisticated because of the war. Self-discipline is not something that's easy to come by, because we have to do something very drastic to create self-discipline in our life. Our mother comes and spanks us and says, now will you pick up your clothes? Now will you do this? Instead of being a master sharer, a master teacher with her kids, she'd just say, well, kids, this is great. I have a new rule. Any clothing I find on the floor goes in the trash.
But I have to pay for it, she says to herself.
I don't want to say that. No, any clothes I find on the floor goes in the trash. And then the kids find there's no more clothing, and they have to go to school naked, virtually. And they say, but,
I'm sorry, I stand up for what I said.
I said, any clothes left on the floor goes in the trash. It does not go back to you. Go to the Salvation Army, throw it in the rubbish or whatever. But you have to pay for it. I don't have to pay for anything. I've already bought you clothes. You didn't take care of them, so that's the way it goes. I just said, if it's on the floor, it goes in the trash. Now, you don't have to put it on the floor. You can put it on your bed. You can hang it in the closet. You can put it in your cupboards. But you see, self-discipline is terrible. The mother to be self-disciplined with her children is awfully hard, because she wants to buy their love. And she thinks she's buying their love by letting them do what they want to do. And the children will always love their mother. They will always love their mother. But they will not always respect their mother. And respect comes by standing up for principles, by standing up for what is right, by doing what is right. Mother says, at 3 o'clock every Wednesday afternoon, I go play bridge with the girls. And I won't be back until 8.
What? Where's who to make supper?
You are. But, no, that's what it is. And so mother goes. She doesn't put the food out for supper. She feels that the family can figure that out for themselves. She doesn't make the table. She doesn't call somebody in to make their supper for them. She says, you take care of it yourself. And she takes her one evening out that she chooses to take, every Wednesday or whatever. Now, if mother were to prepare everything for the family, they would miss her because everything was ready. If mother did not go to her Wednesday evening sorte, when it was her turn to go, everybody would say, she feels she got to go stay home and take care of us, you know. Wednesday night comes along, 3 o'clock, time for mom to take off, and the girls are all hither and yon, and so she goes to a movie by herself, or maybe with the neighbor fellow, the man next door, you know, or the lady next door, whatever. But why can't she go with the man next door? Why do we think that going with the man next door is bad? Well, if the husband and wife don't love each other, then going with the man next door is bad, because they're jealous. But if they don't love each other, what difference does it make if they're jealous? And perhaps maybe a little jealousy might help to spark the marriage up a little bit. But who needs jealousy to spark the marriage? That's like having a war to improve the economy. Self-discipline is a really exciting point of view. It's really exciting when people realize that when they discipline themselves, they are master of themselves. When they discipline themselves, they are in charge. When they discipline themselves, whatever choices they choose, they can have because they are the master of their thought. Now, what is it that you would like to experience in your life?
I am independently wealthy.
Oh, really? Let's see how the evidence stacks up. If you're independently wealthy, what do you think? Do you think you have bills? No. Do you buy beyond your desires? No. Are you self-disciplined in how you spend your money? Sure. The richer you are, the more careful you are in spending your money. Just take Ellen's parents. Ellen's parents were poor. They were normal people making their way. And then they built up a business and became fairly well-to-do. But Ellen's parents never became well-to-do. They had the money, but they didn't become well-to-do. Now, why didn't they become well-to-do? Because they lived in the consciousness of the self-discipline they had in the days when they didn't have any money. And they were afraid to spend their money and invest it in things that were going to be to their best. They learned to invest later a little bit, and they learned to do things, but they never had the consciousness of wealth because they didn't believe in themselves. They saw themselves in the pre-wealth days. You know what pre-wealth days are? When you were poor. Before you got your money, you know. Before you got your abundance. If we allow ourselves to think in our pre-abundance days, then we will always live in our pre-abundance days. When you allow yourself to think in your abundance days, then what happens? Then you think abundance. Then you think money. Then you think things. But, really, what is the thing that happens to most people when they get that thing so devoutly to be wished? Once they got it, they don't care for it. Once they got it, they don't use it. Once they got it, it sits on the shelf. We have here the finest computers anyone could want, and they're not used properly. We have the finest printers anyone could want, and they're not used properly. We have the finest television set, my goodness, yes, the finest, that anyone could want. We don't even use it. We watch Tai Bo on it, or practice, or we see a video now and then, but we don't even use it. Because we don't need it. But we enjoy it when we do use it. Now, if I said to you, that television set costs so many dollars, and that goes down to so many dollars a day for, let's say, 6 years. So every day you're not watching that TV, you're throwing away these dollars. Now, if that were true, then that'd be kind of wasteful, wouldn't it? But that's not true. You're not throwing away those dollars. What you are doing is you have made an investment, and you have that investment, and you do not think of that investment in dollars that are being used. If that were the case, we would say, look at our two expeditions, the Earth's Windstar and the Mazda and the truck and all the golf carts. Now, there's six of us here. And look at all the vehicles we have. Are we using these vehicles at the max that we could use them? No. Do we want to? No. Do we feel we must because we paid for them? No. They're there for our pleasure. Now, a self-disciplined person has no feeling that he must use something just because he has it. He uses it, but he doesn't feel he has to use it just because he has it. Let's see. What did I drive last? Then I must drive the next car in line. I must take the next vehicle. Expedition 1, Expedition 2, Windstar 1, the 3, Miata 4, and the truck 5, and then on through the 4 golf carts. So each day I must drive a different vehicle so that they all get used, you know. Oh, the motorhome. Forgot about the motorhome. My goodness sakes. How easy it is to forget about these things. Out of sight, out of mind. Well, if you are built into that philosophy, you spend all your time using these vehicles that are not your pleasure. They all have purpose. They all serve a purpose and do their thing, but we don't have to be using them all the time. We use them when we want them. That's why we got them. A self-disciplined person is a person who is in charge of his thinking, and he doesn't feel that he has to do things just because they're there. He doesn't feel he has to eat the rest of the chocolate cake. There's only a little sliver there just because it's there. He eats a piece of chocolate cake and he sees that other sliver there and says, that's nice, somebody will enjoy that. Or he could even throw it out. He says, I have one piece of chocolate cake that's good for me. More than that, I don't choose to have. And get rid of it. Ooh, chocolate cake, get rid of it. Yeah. Self-discipline allows you to live as a spiritual master. It allows you to live in a very high and a very wonderful way. Now, you think I pick on Ellen when I say the answer to the question that's being asked. Don't go all around the barn. And Ellen has her mind thinking of the ramifications that affect the question instead of just thinking of the answer. We, most of us do this. We think of the ramifications around the question rather than, Ellen, do you think we should go to town?
Yes.
Isn't she wonderful? She self-disciplines herself so quickly. And Ellen would say, well, let's see now. Which car are we taking? What do we want to do? Are we going grocery shopping? Or are we going to the Home Depot to pick up something that's big? Are we doing this? Are we doing that? Which one are we going to take? Ellen, are we going to town?
Yes.
You see, the answer is yes. Then, after that, whatever comes, comes. That's not in the decision, which car or what things. The question is yes or no. So if we can train ourselves to answer all things instantly, yes and no, we are self-disciplining ourselves in a beautiful way. Now, we can go on. We can go on and cover other aspects of it as the need is there, but this moves us into our spiritual awareness more than you will ever know, because self-discipline is hell. And as soon as you get out of hell, where are you?
In heaven.
In heaven. Okay, so let's leave this self-discipline aside. Let's be self-disciplined and not want to be it. Self-discipline is hell. You know why it's hell? Because it goes against everything we've trained ourselves to do. We've trained ourselves to procrastinate. Self-discipline teaches us not to procrastinate. We trained ourselves to put many answers to a question before we answer it. And self-discipline says, what is the perfect answer right now? And on and on and on. So self-discipline is a wonderful thing. But for those who don't want to practice it, it is hell. But for us, it's a wonderful thing. I love you. We have a very strange topic tonight. The topic is, He is a miracle. Now, those of you who know that we're a religious organization and a philosophical organization might think we're talking about Jesus. You might think we're talking about the spiritual man. You might think we're talking about illumination and inspiration and so forth. Well, we are. We're talking about all those things. And all those things wrapped up in one little guy called Snuggles. Snuggles is a Maltese Terrier type dog. Quite small. It's 10 weeks old now. And at 8 weeks, you held it in your hand and you didn't know you had anything. Now it is just a couple weeks longer, and with the monsters who are feeding it constantly, he has grown to be quite a handful. He's no longer fitting in the palm of John's hand. John has to use two palms to hold him. He is just really growing. But why do we call him a miracle? He is a miracle. Well, out of the kindness of our heart, we bought him so that my sister would have something to cuddle and love and help her to know that she's whole and perfect and a beautiful being. And she held him and said, that's wonderful, she loves him. But unfortunately, the Christ child had a problem too, and Snuggles had a problem. There was no room at the inn for him, so he could not stay there. So he had to come back home with us. And so as he came back home with us, he started a campaign. And the campaign was, win your affections. He's running for office, you know. he wants to be the chief dog of our domain here. He doesn't realize we have two other dogs that are ahead of him. But that doesn't bother him. He goes to these two other dogs and he says, okay, boys, I've made a decision. I'll stay with you if you guys behave. But remember, I'm the boss here. And Button objected for a minute, and he said, I told you, remember, I'm the boss. And Button, rawr, he says, I don't mind your growling, but it's just a lot of wasted effort. I am the boss here. And Button still doesn't know what to make of that. Love, he just joined in the game. He says, I'm just 9 weeks old, too. And the two of them just wrestle and play and wrestle and play. Button sometimes gets a little over self-righteous at times. That, you know, you're coming into my territory here. And I used to get all the hugs and all the kisses and all the caring. And now you're taking my share. Well, of course, that can never happen, can it? We can never take somebody else's share of love. If we are lovable, we'll get lots of love. If we're not lovable, we won't get much love, if any. Now, Snuggle is a lovable puppy. He's a very lovable, very affectionate, and of course he isn't a puppy yet. He's not even a year. When they're a year, they can mate, you know. So, he's not a year, so he's just in weeks. Now, what is 4 weeks old? That's 2 months. He's just a little tyke. What's 9 weeks old? That's 2.5 months about, you know. So, he's just a little fellow. Yes, we're talking about you. He's giving me his total attention. He's looking at me as if to say, and I want to make sure you get this all right. If you're going to talk about me as that he is a miracle, that I'm a miracle, I want you to make sure that you get all the details correct. Snuggle? Do you like your name, Snuggles? He looks at me, bright eyes, full open, saying, I don't care what you call me, just feed me. Just love me. Just huggle me. Yeah, I know what you're saying. And you see, another thing about Snuggles, his eyes, if you look in his eyes, the whites of his eyes are more, they're a little bit pink, but basically they're white. And most Maltese have red eyes, red whites of their eyes. And I think we've got a very unique, special character here who is going to be something good. Now, we have 10 more minutes. What is it that Snuggles is going to do that's going to endear him to us and everyone else as a miracle dog? Well, Ellen, without thinking about it, started saying, well, he'll go with us to Europe, and he will be part of the seminar. And then she went on to say, he'll not only be the seminar, be part of it, he'll be the drawing card for the seminar. We'll announce Snuggles is coming, and people will come to the seminar in droves to see Snuggles. And we won't show the picture ahead of time, you know, just after he's there. And here is Snuggles. Now, Snuggles, what do you have to say to the group today? And so Ellen, having learned ventriloquism, stands behind Snuggles, and Snuggles gets at the platform there, puts his paws up on the podium, and turns his head from side to side, and Ellen is speaking through him, and people really think it's Snuggles speaking, because Snuggles is being dominant. And Ellen, when Snuggles doesn't cooperate, she pulls her right hand down, which has Snuggles in it, puts her left hand up, which has a puppet of Snuggles on her hand. And so then she gets this thing going, and she said, I like all of you. I think you're wonderful. I think you're fantastic. And everybody thinks that it's Snuggles doing this. And then she brings Snuggles up there, and he stands there and looks back and forth. You know, they really know it's a dog. And then she takes him down again, and she brings up his image and says, today we're going to talk about miracles, and I am a miracle. Why am I a miracle? Because there is no other dog on earth that I know of, perhaps there are some place, but I don't know of it, that has hair instead of fur. Now, if you look at my hair, I have pure white hair. Now, there's not a dog on earth that is pure white hair. They may be silken white, but they're not pure white like I am, because the white hair that I have is representative of the heart that I have. The heart that I have is pure white, pure beautiful, pure honest, honorable, and with integrity. My heart is so filled with goodness and right action. Actually, you see, Ellen probably has something in her mind, because she is training me to be a healing dog. Now, oh, you didn't know she was going to do that to you? Well, that's what she's planning on doing. He gives a big yawn. He says, I'm really not a working dog. He says, I'm a lap dog, and I'm a dog that sits on your shoulder, you know, wraps itself around your head and yawns. Yes, and lays my head on the table in total peace, and I own the place. I own the place. Now, how is Ellen going to teach him how to be a healing dog? Well, it's easy. And I'm going to tell you, and I'd like you to listen, and while you listen, I'd like you to apply it. Okay. Ellen is going to teach him to be a healing dog by telling everyone he is a healing dog. Right. That every time he licks you, any illness that you have is instantly gone. And if he licks you more than once, you're clean. If he licks you more than once, any mental problem you have is in balance. If he licks you three or four times, every need for friendship, relationships, success in your business, every need for your perfect partner, every need for anything that you might want in your life is fulfilled. And then they'll say, how much? I'd like to buy Snuggles. I mean, you know, I'd like to keep that sort of a dreamboat around me. And we say, well, Snuggles has to make that decision. Now, let's see if Snuggles wants to go to you. And so as Sylvia presents Snuggles out, she holds her hand between his legs, holding onto his tail, so they can't see that she's holding onto his tail. And then Snuggles looks this way, but he doesn't go anywhere. And she says, you see, he wants to stay here. Now, that's a con job, of course. But there are more ways to skin a cat than you can really ever dream of. And, yes, Snuggles. But Snuggles is a healer. All you have to do is call him a healer. And everybody who comes near him will be healed. Now, what about this campus, Ellen? Say it.
It's a healing place.
What is the statement? Ellen, what is the statement?
This is the tape.
Loud enough so you can have it on the tape.
It's
these grounds.
These grounds are pure.
She's being creative here.
Whoever enters these grounds is instantly healed because of the vibrations of the purity which dwells on this.
Everyone who enters these grounds is instantly healed according to their expectation and according to their belief. Oh, thank you very much. But you see, we have to get these things properly in there. Now, are these healing grounds here?
Yes.
Is that a healing dog?
Yes.
Is Button a healing dog?
Yes.
Is Love a healing dog?
Yes.
Was
Mitchell.
Yeah. Was Gus a healing dog?
Yeah.
Very much so.
Very much.
Gus made it his business every Sunday and every Wednesday when we had groups of people, he'd go sit on the lap of the person who had the greatest healing need. And when he left that lap, that person was just completely changed. It's a wonderful thing. I think that you'll all find great changes in your life because you've had the association here with Little Love and Button. And who's that other guy?
Snuggles.
Snuggles and Mr. Snuggles. Now, how can we make Mr. Snuggles into even a more effective instrument of healing? When we talk to Mr. Snuggles, we say, Snuggles, you're a healer. Snuggles, everyone you go to, you bring them wholeness and happiness and joy. Snuggles, everything that you do is a blessing to everyone in the world. And well, what are we saying? Who are we saying that to? We're saying that to ourselves. Now, when we build up this consciousness that anyone who walks on this property is instantly healed, are they healed?
Yep.
But who did the healing?
They
themselves.
We did.
They believed in
it. We did it. We saw them whole and perfect. Now, if we don't see them whole and perfect, they can be whole and perfect and we would never see it. If we don't have that inner vision within ourselves like Snuggles has of seeing everything beautiful and everything perfect, then it will not be so. Not for us. I looked at Button this morning as we came out of the house, and I thought I saw him limping. And so I was studying his left front leg, and I was watching to see how he limped. And he wasn't limping. He was just sort of prancing, you know, and sort of, you know, leaning this way and that way. And I checked him over very thoroughly. He wasn't limping. But I thought he was limping, so I was creating him limping. And if he hadn't been smart as he is and came up to me and said, look, Dad, I'm whole and perfect, now knock it off. You know, you're giving me a problem here, telling me that I'm limping. And so he was done. And the same with Little Love. Little Love runs around pretending to limp now and then. And so I look at Little Love and I say, boy, oh boy, look at that rabbit, twing! And he's not limping anymore. He's after that rabbit, and he's after whatever, he doesn't have to even see it. In fact, he sees a lot of things, and he starts to talk in the house, and then Gus Button comes rushing in and says, what am I missing? And of course, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. But they have fun. And is Snuggles a healing dog?
Yes.
Can we advertise that snuggles is a healing dog? Will everyone want to come and hold him and snuggle him?
Yes.
Will everyone be instantly healed?
Yes.
Is everyone healed before they hug him?
Right away.
Before they hug him?
Thinking even on
him. Just thinking about him. Is everyone healed before they even come on campus?
Mm-hmm.
Is everyone healed on campus here? Nobody has a cold on campus. Everybody's perfect, right?
Yes.
Okay. If that is true, where does it start?
In the thought, in the mind.
Is Snuggles a healer?
Yeah.
Are you a healer?
Yeah.
Are we each a healer?
Yes.
Do we heal? The answer is yes, ourself first.
Okay.
A practitioner first heals his own consciousness and then sees everyone else holding prayer. You see, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, even if you're wrong. It's better to be enthusiastically wrong than moderately right, you know. You know. Really?
He's
a healer. Are you a healer?
Yes.
No. Yes, I'm a practitioner. So, let our puppy teach us lessons in life. And let's learn these lessons. And let's remember, he is a miracle. But we created him.
Yeah.
I love you. Platonic love.